Welcome to the Freedom Line, the podcast for the Center for Individual Freedom, where we meet nonsense with common sense. Here's your host, Renee Giacchino.
Welcome to the Freedom Cast. My name's Renee Giacchino. I'm corporate counsel for the Center for Individual Freedom. Joining me again is Tiger Joyce. Tiger serves as the president of the American Tort Reform Association. To follow Tiger and the work of his organization, you can check him out at ATRA.org. That's ATRA.org. Tiger, welcome back to the program. Thanks so much for joining me.
Renee, thank you. Great to be on with you again. Appreciate it very much.
So August, which we just finished, is typically a very quiet time in Washington, D.C. In fact, it seems like around the country, things really slow down. But that has not necessarily been the case for you and the folks at ATRA. Is that right?
Yeah, you know, you're right, Renee. We generally have, like a lot of businesses and other operations, things quiet a little bit, you know, people go on vacations and so forth. And it just seemed like we didn't really have that letdown, which is good in some ways, but I think some of the activity level is just so high, and you know, the matters and priorities that we, you know, are looking to pursue are very active, and I think the challenges are quite significant, and a lot going on in the you know, in the world of litigation and litigation reform.
So let's talk a little bit about that. Your organization is the nation's first organization exclusively dedicated to reforming the civil justice system. You guys do that through public education, through enactment of legislation. But we have seen over the last couple of years, maybe even decade or so, and it's something I know that you guys also follow very, very closely and are very engaged in, and that is that we are seeing legislation by regulation, if that's a fair way to classify it.
I think that's exactly right. And if I were to correct anything, I would say it goes back even a little further. I think probably the first prime example of this, Renee, was when the states settled litigation against the tobacco industry in the late 1990s. And I think when you look at what the states did and what the litigation accomplished, it's pretty safe to say that it all could, and from our perspective, should have been accomplished, if it were to be accomplished, by elected officials who are responsible to all of us. They are accountable to all of us. But instead, you had this sweeping reform and change that was made through the court system using legal theories. And from our standpoint, you know, we are of the view, I should say my organization is of the view, you know, the courts exist to resolve disputes and to resolve constitutional questions. And when you go back to the reading of, you know, the work of the framers, the courts were meant to be kind of the least invasive of the branches of government. And for good reason, because judges are not accountable to us. They are, especially looking at the federal judges, they're appointed for life. So that they can make the hard decisions on what the law does or doesn't provide. But I think when you see, whether it's the tobacco litigation going back into the late 1990s or now, you're seeing the litigation involving social media companies. We look at this and think, okay, well, you're talking about broader public policy. You're talking about, you know, obviously a vibrant and important part of our economy. You're talking about protecting children. All important matters and priorities for all of us. But I think when we look at this, we think, okay, who is ultimately accountable for these decisions? The businesses make decisions based on what they believe is in their best interests. And you've got these states that through the court system are agreeing to settlements, and maybe these discussions go on for quite some time. But at the end of the day, it's entered in through a process that the public has no input on. You know, there's no legislative debate. They don't have committee hearings. That's how the Congress is set up. That's how state legislatures are set up. And we can lament what they do or don't do, or think that a particular legislative body is ineffective or It goes to one side of the political spectrum or the other that we don't, one might not agree with. But at the end of the day, they are elected by us. They are our elected officials. And from ATRA's perspective, this tendency, I wouldn't say it's a tendency. It's a strategy,
right,
of some to accomplish objectives through the courts that they could never get the public officials, elected officials, to accomplish on their behalf.
Well, it's interesting. I read, you did a letter to the editor for the Wall Street Journal following up on a piece, their Meta Sensible Settlement. And in that, I mean, you describe it and you're right. It's a pattern. It's not an anomaly. These trial lawyers have used the same playbook, as you said, starting back with opioids and tobacco and other industries, to sue repeatedly for big settlements. And I understand, as you said, that, some of this for the company's perspective, they work to get this settled in their best interest. And oftentimes that means not elongated litigation. I mean, we know the wheels of justice move very slowly. And again, the only winners oftentimes in these situations are the lawyers, which gets me to another very interesting piece that's posted on your organization's website. One of your colleagues who works with you posted a piece about, what has been happening in, I think it was South Carolina lawyers winning big in New Mexico, which is fascinating to me that they would go outside of their state to even hire these lawyers who are raking in millions, if not billions of dollars, and really how much of that money is getting to the affected or injured individuals.
Yeah, I mean, you've put your finger on, and my colleague Lauren Jarrell's piece is right on target about that. And I, just sitting here, just listening to you, you're highlighting those matters. It brings up important topics. We put out what we call our Judicial Hellholes Report every year. And when I get asked, or when you look at the report, the sort of the central piece of this is, what lawyers call forum shopping. It's South Carolina's lawyers suing. Why do they go to New Mexico? Because that's the best place for them to go. And it's picking that particular venue. But even going back to the earlier conversation, Renee, this process, when we talk about whether it's the Meta settlement or going back to the tobacco cases, it's driven by a bunch of lawyers. It's driven by lawyers with a profit motive. Now, I'm not here to criticize having a profit motive. That's what makes business, that's what makes the business world go around. And that's terrific. But when we're talking about public policy, when we're talking about exercising the power that is provided to, whether it's the federal government or state governments, under our system, to think that is being driven in large part by, in many instances, by profit motivated plaintiffs' lawyers, turns the whole situation on its head even further. And so, whether it's, as I said, whether it's the tobacco litigation, you saw thousands of cases brought against opioid manufacturers and distributors and others, and even pharmacies, in that litigation, and now the social media companies. It's as though we have handed the both the public policy and the law enforcement badge and authority to a bunch of plaintiffs' lawyers who are looking to make money. As I said, making money is not the issue. It's doing it in this context that we think is so problematic. And I think when confronted by these issues, public officials will agree to it. But it is, I think we see kind of the path of least resistance to try to accomplish an outcome, but to do it this way rather than the hard work of making policy and accomplishing objectives that serve the interests of the public, through our way. And so again, we just think that we should go back to, and certainly should aspire to go back to, a system where litigation does not play this central role in policymaking and determining important issues for our society.
And I think numbers, you know, really can tell this story. As ATRA's Public Affairs Director Bailey Aragon put in a piece that was published in the Albuquerque Journal, she said that new details show that of the $942 million judgment, that's a lot of money, finalized earlier this year in the Meta settlement case, that South Carolina law firm is going to pocket $68 million. You know, those are funds that were intended to address New Mexico's youth mental health crisis. I mean, how do we get that money to the individuals and the organizations that really are supposed to effectuate this change rather than lining the pockets? I mean, is Congress skirting its responsibility? I mean, are we not screaming loud enough that, you know, this is an issue that you know, there needs to be activity on Capitol Hill? Does it look like there might be anything, you know, being proposed? I mean, I know a lot of the states, it's done state by state. But I think, you know, and I'm not a huge proponent of, you know, the federal government stepping in every instance and dictating to the states, but it sure sounds like this might be one of them where it needs to happen.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good discussion to be held, but I think you're correct. And, you know, it was Bailey's piece highlighted, and Bailey wrote that she had originally worked for former governor of Susana Martinez in New Mexico. So when she writes, they publish, and which is great, and it was a terrific article. But I, you know, again, you put your finger on very important topics. Number one, which is, where does the money go? Begins with going to the lawyers. They get taken care of first, and then if it just goes generally into the treasury of a state, you know, it could be building roads. It could be, you know, I have to look through some of those details if there's any specific commitment. But, you know, again, I bring up the legislative process. Legislators, when revenue comes into the state, should be the ones to make the decisions about how to allocate those funds. And so I think that whether it's the federal government, whether it's a state government, when you read that, oh, well, the government is going to receive X amount of money in a settlement, and your answer for the next question should be, okay, well, for what purpose and how will it be applied? And will it be will it be dedicated to a particular purpose? And we've seen, going back to the tobacco litigation, that a lot of the money that comes in, and it continues to come in, I think, with some of the payment systems that were established in the aftermath of that settlement, really just go into the general operations of of governments. And again, I ask the question, you know, if that's effectively a tax on a product, why is it that the courts are levying that tax through a litigation process rather than the states? That's, you know, again, something that should concern any citizen, any consumer, in there, whether it's in the states or at the federal level.
And at the end of the day, I mean, as consumers, we are going to pay for it.
You put it perfectly. It, you know, ultimately, the abuses and the excesses come out of our pockets. You know, whether it's private litigation, whether it's this sort of, you know, this government, plaintiff lawyer driven government litigation. And there's another topic too, Renee, which I think would be important for your listeners to be aware of, that we're very focused on as well. Sort of beyond the states, we've seen countless examples. I think the opioids provide this example, and I think we're seeing it in the social media world with school boards and others. We're getting into other governmental entities within a particular state. So while I may, you know, and ATRA may lament the activities of some of these states, when you pile on all these, you know, whether it's counties, cities, other municipalities, and units of government or school boards or school systems, you know, the question is, where does it stop? And why can't there be accountability somewhere, you know, between, you know, within a given state, so that at the very least, If you're faced with one of these circumstances as a defendant, a potential defendant, at least you know that there's some sort of a limit on how on potential exposure and liability. In other words, if a city were to sue one of these social media platforms, what prevents the neighboring city from doing that? And at what point can there be closure of these matters? Or are these, are we going to consign them to just endless litigation involving virtually any governmental entity?
And I think that gets to, you know, two things that are important in this process. You know, one is predictability, and the second one is transparency.
Agreed. And I think both are very important. And I think just clarity as well about where is the authority. You know, for all that we may, you know, ATRA may have differing opinions with certain state attorneys general, we believe that state attorneys general should be required to approve or at the very least sign off on a local government or other governmental entity suing a business, you know, as we're seeing in the, for example, in the social media context. And so that's, I think that's exactly right. And I think transparency in the litigation and certainly transparency in the hiring of the individuals who stand to benefit. You mentioned the South Carolina lawyers in New Mexico. I think making sure that we know exactly who they are, how they're going to be paid, how much they're paid, and, you know, let the public know and do that out in the open, because I think too often there are matters that are obscured in that process.
Well, and there's so much trolling going on. I mean, it's so hard to watch television anymore with commercials, or turn on your radio, or drive your car and the billboard signs. And you know, there's a lot of that going on. And sadly, you know, I think, of course, we all want justice where there's wrongdoing. But in, I think a lot of the instances, again, you know, any awards really aren't going perhaps to the affected individuals as they should, or to support them through organizations, but to line the pockets of the trial lawyers.
I couldn't agree more, whether it's in the type of litigation that we talked about in this Meta settlement, or if you're talking about what we call the trial lawyer playbook, where they target an industry or they target a product and build up a client base that becomes the driving force. And at a certain point in, you know, whether you're looking at the Roundup litigation, you know, the talc cases, any number of these sort of we call mass tort type cases, as much as anything, the volume becomes the driving force. You know, good luck managing, you know, dealing with 20,000 lawsuits, you know, going through a multi-district litigation process. Good luck dealing with these matters when they become class actions, where there's an effort to certify class actions. You know, the bigger it gets, the further afield it gets from the underlying question of, you know, the duty of care, you know, the matters we learned about in law school, and was there damage and was there proximate cause? You know, just the litigation costs and just doing the intake on the, you know, on these matters, and the industry that's developed, to recruit clients, and then market those. And then how are they handled, you know, going forward? And so the costs and the problem from our perspective is all the incentives are there to just make these private lawsuit matters bigger, because the volume helps to drive the ultimate settlement, even if it's found that the defendants are winning their cases, as we often see is the case.
Well, and with forum shopping, you know, they make sure that they're lining themselves up with the, you know, liberal judges who are going to rule their way, instead of saying, you know what, this is a matter that needs to be taken up at the federal level or by our state legislature. You know, we're not going to legislate through the judicial system. But unfortunately, that's not happening. And in part, you know, it's not happening as well because the companies you know, again, as we talked about in the beginning, they see how long that road is, and sometimes it's easier or less costly.
And I think
to just
in our system, you know, to oversimplify it, you know, we expect there to be generally a tension between the different functions of government. If you go back to the Constitution, just the, you know, what power does the president have? What power does the Congress have? What is the role of the courts? And if Congress seemingly is, or is allowing, or if a state legislature is allowing important, you know, policy matters, or failing to address them in the, you know, in the eyes of many, well, that opens up opportunities in other branches, so to speak, whether it's through, you know, executive overreach or arguably executive overreach. But I think what we're seeing most poignantly are the lawsuits that we've been discussing, and looking to the courts as the place, as the venue in which to accomplish objectives. The legislatures need to step up. That's the point. And you know, when we read the accounts of this settlement, that was our reaction, which is, where are the legislatures? Where are the people that are accountable to us, as opposed to the judges, as opposed to the parties? I guess you could argue that the state in these matters, the states in these matters are accountable, but it's pretty remote, and they've delegated so much of their power to these plaintiff's lawyers who have a profit motive. So it really is a problem, at least from our perspective, just from the standpoint of, you know, who is supposed to be handling, taking care of these matters, and who you highlighted, you know, obviously important matters. Accountability for the outcome has to be part of this as well, beyond transparency. So and in this, when this is the path of going through litigation driven by plaintiff's lawyers, there is no accountability. At least in theory, if a legislative body does something or fails to do something, you can at least in theory vote people in or out of office. That's not the case here.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely not. Well, we stand together with you, Tiger, and your organization. Our guest, Tiger Joyce, president of the American Tort Reform Association, ATRA.org. Thank you again for the wonderful work that you do, that you and your colleagues do at ATRA. Always a pleasure to have you join me on the program. Hope you'll be back soon.
We'd love to have
some good news to talk about next time.
Thanks.